Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode number 85, I think, of the Pika Serenity podcast. I am one of your hosts, Emilson, and as always, I am joined by my co-host, Anomaly.
Hello.
And this week, we're going to be talking a little bit about how we plan cooldowns for Raid, for Mythic Plus, you know, whatever that might be. Plan healer and to a lesser extent tank cooldown usage around the encounters. But before that, we are going to be talking about just kind of what's happened this past week, and there's been some big news. Yes. But before that, how has your progression gone, Anom?
We're still not dead.
Oh no.
Yeah, no. We thought we were lined up for a kill on Thursday, and we ran into just some IRL issues. So two of our ranged DPS, both I think lose power. I think that was the issue. So they were not there. So we had to pull in, you know, two other raiders who performed well. It's just I think 150 versus two pulls on a boss. Very different
Kind of experience level there.
Yeah, so luck. I mean, both of them performed great. I don't think they had a couple of weird deaths like in the first handful of pulls, which sort of set us back a little bit in terms of like making progression. But we saw a lot of phase three, which was good. Saw the final platform probably like two or three times again, just not with enough consistency, I'll say.
Yeah.
So Sylvanas lives another reset, which is slightly upsetting, but yeah, I mean, if she doesn't die this week, I mean, it's just sort of a. We're lined up for a kill if everybody's there, so that's the goal. But it was not fun.
We had one of our boomkins get disconnected from the internet in the last 30 minutes of Raid Friday. So it wasn't like all of Raid, but it was still like pretty annoying to have someone, like especially someone key like that, where like we are relying on our boomkins to do arrow damage in the intermission. The two of them are like 40% of our arrow damage.
Oh, yeah.
And then, like, the two of them are, like, 80% of our damage on the Mosshorn Colossus. And, it's having him out meant, well, we also had another ranged out that we, you know, was just, we knew it was going to be out before Raid. So we actually didn't have another range that we could swap in.
Oh, God.
So we had one of our healers that had rerolled a couple times this tier get back on one of their previous characters. We brought in the healer that we had out and then just tried to do things. And honestly, we probably should have just called Raid early at that point.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we got a little bit of intermission practice, but it's wasn't super great.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's the funny thing is it was one of our boomkins, so we swapped. We had an extra boomkin that was on the bench, so we were able to swap like for like there.
Yeah.
Then we lost our elemental shaman, so we brought in a mage. And the funny thing is like phase one was really well. The problem is like phase two, like the platforms and stuff. There's just I think there's sort of like enough movement, enough of a dance you do that like if you don't know what you're doing, you can get clipped by a bunch of waves, die, you can mess up. Running, yeah. I mean, as they're bridges, but they're still like random holes in some of those bridges if you're not careful.
Oh, man. So. Doing sales yesterday, I managed to jump through the start of one of the bridges.
Oh, really?
Which I then learned from one of the other people doing the sale with us that you don't want to jump at the start of the bridge.
Yeah.
You want to jump at the end of the bridge.
Because it doesn't connect all the time.
Yeah. But if you jump at the start of the bridge, sometimes you just fall through.
I've seen that.
And that's what happened to me. There wasn't a hole there or anything. Like I literally just fell through.
Gotcha. Oh, that's awful.
So walk onto the bridge.
Yeah.
I haven't had that happen on Mythic yet, thankfully, but.
Oh, that's good.
Our prog is, we're actually at like, we finally got out of phase one hell. Last Sunday, we were starting to get good, like phase two pulls. On Friday, we saw phase three a couple times with, like, you know, 18 people alive.
Oh, nice.
And then I promptly died both times to Merciless on the far platform while trying to vacuum, which is a great way to get started. I had to turn a timer on for that, so I knew when to get the fuck off the platform. But,
It's definitely it's fun, to say the least. I died. Yeah, I had a crazy death. I died to Rive, got battle res right into debris. Probably died twice. So that was my, like, not smart moment.
I'm going to be talking a little bit before raid today, because there's a strat for Rive, okay? There's a strat for Rive.
Oh, okay.
It's very easy strat. You stand towards the middle, not like in the center, but you know there's like the compass on the top of the platform. So you stand like on the edge of that, gives you plenty of time to dodge things. And then you wait for the Rive line, okay? You stand next to it. And then once it's gone, you move into it. There's almost never debris there.
Okay, that's a good one.
So much easier. We have people who are still dying to Rive with some regularity, and it's like, okay, just do this. It's going to make it easier. It's simpler. You don't have to, like, we had we had someone die because they stood behind the Rive and didn't know that even though there's no animation, it will still kill you.
Does it? I've also stood behind Rive and not died, but I've been
still in between the Rives, it won't kill you, just like if you're in between the Rives anywhere else on the platform. But if you stand behind one of the shades, the Rive does hit there. There's not a graphic on the ground for it, but it will still kill you.
Gotcha. Yeah, my strat has been with Rive is to charge wherever it's coming from. So like wherever she is, just run towards it and run one of the lines and then dodge left or right for the debris, because the next one's always going to come from your left or your right.
You're doing basically what I've been doing, because it's like you locate it, you face it, you get out of the line and you get into where the line was, go left or right to get out of the debris, because the debris tends to go towards people, and there shouldn't be any people where the Rive line is.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So I always try and charge it, because it always, like, if the next one comes to the left or right, you generally might be at the edge at that point, and then you get to, like, you get a break from like the third Rive, because they come in like what, three sets of three, basically.
Yeah.
With a little pause in the middle. So yeah, so that's what I've been trying to do. But that one, I got clipped by one, died, got so upset, got battle res, just took it instinctively, and
just died. Probably
just died again. And then of course my raider was like, "You don't take battle reses in the intermission." Like, okay. Yeah. No, I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
That's rough.
Yeah, so it was good, but I mean, like, hopefully we kill it this week, get done and sort of have enough time to start playing some New World. Will be the new MMO out there.
Nice. Does your guild have a group that's forming up for it?
No, I don't we might. I mean, I'm just gonna play with a couple buddies and chill. I mean, I think I randomly picked a server this week and was like, I'm gonna play here if anybody else wants to play. So like, it's been zero planning. I think my other buddy picked our Covenant. Which I think is that the thing, the faction.
I don't know that. Yeah. I know it's like faction. Yeah.
Yeah. He picked the faction because it sounded cool. So we are the purple one, which I think it's called Syndicate, and we're gonna go Syndicate. So.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know what any of that means. I played the beta.
Are you gonna be running around in Westfall by any chance?
Is there a Westfall zone?
I don't think so.
I have no idea. I think I played up to like level 10 in the beta, one of the beta weekends in this game, and then I haven't read anything. So I know they've changed a bunch of stuff since I've played in terms of like progression and things, but I know nothing about it. And I think it's one of the few.
When does it come out?
Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay.
And like a weird staggered launch. So, yeah.
Well, if we kill Sylvanas on Friday, I might install it and just like, that's my weekend.
Yeah. It seems like it's a cool, like, chill crafting game. So I'm gonna chill craft, I think is what I'm gonna do. So
as a member of the Syndicate.
Yeah, as a member of the
very Syndicate. Chill crafting faction.
Yeah. Kind of like they're supposed to be like some dark brooding, I don't know, some like spy people. So we'll see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Mm-hmm. We'll see. Very crafting.
Yeah. Crafting. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Close. Yeah. So all right. I guess in any event, we can start talking about what happened last week.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, I think the big thing is just the amount of nerfs they put into the instance. Now that we've got cross realm mythic and Hall of Fame is closed on each side, so I guess we'll take these sort of boss by boss, because they did do a couple of changes to a bunch of different bosses, in both mythic and heroic difficulties. We'll probably focus on the mythic stuff, but so first up is Painsmith. They basically did a couple of changes here. First one is the distance between the spike floor gaps in phase two or in the intermission is now shorter. So you won't get those sort of edge-to-edge runs anymore.
From everything that I've heard, this actually makes it, right? While this does make it easier for people that are still learning the fight, like people that are encountering the fight now are going to have an easier time with it. It changes exactly where the like ball gap, spike gap overlaps are in the intermission. So that means that if you already have like the intermission like down and you know what you're doing, now you have to relearn bits of it in order to compensate for that, which, you know, if you're currently progressing it, I'm sorry, it's going to cost you like a couple pulls to relearn that. But I think it is overall easier.
Yeah, I heard a couple of reports of people just going too quickly, like remembering how fast you had to be in the intermission and then going too fast, and like overshooting the gap, or like in your in your point, like ending up where a gap and a ball overlap and like not knowing what to do. So, so it's one change. They also changed the Shadow Steel chains Pyrdok damage, which is the chains debuff people get. They changed the amount of damage you take while you have that, which should help reduce sort of the, particularly in phase three, like the insta gibs you might see where someone might have chains, tank mechanic goes off, they'll take a bunch of damage from the tank mechanic and then tick and like the next tick or two down. So it's a couple of changes. The floor gap change that was huge on Painsmith. They made a few changes to Fatescribe. They're all heroic and below difficulties, but basically you have more time to run your rune.
It pretty much means that you can always, 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 always solo your rune, even if you get there a little bit slowly. These only affect the intermission ones, so you don't, they don't affect the, well, maybe the first one affects the phase three ones. I'm not entirely sure on that. But the phase three ones, you still might need a second person. But the phase one or the intermission ones, like you can always, always solo them, even if you're slow.
Yeah. So good for everybody. Not again, these are all non-mythic changes for Fatescribe. So but yeah. Not too shabby. All right, then we get to Kel'Thuzad, and there is a plethora, I mean a cornucopia, as some might say, as we enter this fall season of changes. And I mean it does everything to speed up the fight, I think is what it is. So to go through these one at a time, they've reduced...
Let's actually, I think we should start with the developer note for this before we go through the specific changes. So the TLDR is that, well, let me just read it. As we saw, the community strategies for defeating Kel'Thuzad on mythic difficulty settle onto a preferred approach that involved long stretches of time stalling, waiting for cooldowns to come back up. We started exploring ways of changing the encounter so that this no longer felt required. They talk about how it was frustrating and they want to avoid increasing the difficulty of the encounter or making guilds relearn the encounter. And they tried things like what we saw on PTR a couple weeks ago with cooldowns resetting at the start of every phase one. And they have ultimately opted not to do that. So that change from PTR will not be going live. But instead, they have made the change to make it impossible to stall indefinitely while attempting to reduce the difficulty of key elements of the encounter so that it no longer feels required. So with that in mind, the changes that they've made, Kel'Thuzad health reduced by 5%. Remnant of Kel'Thuzad, aka the phylactery, health reduced by 20%.
Massive.
Adds upstairs during the intermission, so the banshees and the abominations, health reduced by 20%. Frozen destruction, which is the effect from killing one of the glacial spikes. Initial damage reduced by 40%. Damage over time reduced by 10% and now only lasts 8 seconds. Previously was 10 seconds. Then there's a bug fix where Kel'Thuzad could sometimes cast abilities while Howling Blizzard was going on. That shouldn't happen anymore. But then the real kicker, Howling Blizzard now inflicts stacking damage over the duration of the channel on mythic difficulty. And the number on that is really high. So to hear from Squishy, from Might, basically, if you spend more than about 5 seconds in Howling Blizzard, it's just a raid wipe.
Yeah.
Previously, you would wait until the end of the Howling Blizzard, and then push him before the next tank mechanic went off. This means that either, so with the new timings, there's also now a tank add just prior to the Howling Blizzard. So you have two choices. basically. You can push him before the Howling Blizzard, but while tank adds are still up. Or you can push him after he starts the Howling Blizzard, after you've killed the tank adds, but now there's blizzard, like frost patches on the ground that are going to explode during the intermission.
So you just have to beat it at that point.
You just have to beat it, basically.
Yeah.
And like one of your tanks is going to tank both of the abominations for a time while the rest of the tank adds get cleaned up. But they did. They just, that final change was just totally unnecessary.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, yeah, because people aren't going to, it's just a weird, that change just like makes.
If people don't have to AFK for 45 seconds, they're not going to AFK for 45 seconds.
Right, yeah, and I think the reason you did it, so they made the health changes, right? So the 20% nerf to the phylactery is honestly actually bigger than the overall health nerf, just because you no longer need to ensure you have DPS cooldowns, you know, for anyone. You can send like whoever you want down now. You don't need to make sure your Boom King cooldowns are up, things like that. So so that's you know, very big in terms of just lessening the requirement. They sort of mirror that with the upstairs phase, because if you just change the phylactery would push so much quicker. You end up wiping to the upstate stuff. So the abomination and soul reaver health. The honestly, the scary part there is the soul reaver health nerf,
because they're gonna die.
Those so already quick. Die so quickly. So like 20% less health. You literally, because what we would end up doing is, and I feel like most people did this, you take your A bomb, stack them on one of the soul reavers, and then move them to the second one, and then hopefully you kill everything at the same time. Now you're basically just gonna put dots on your soul reavers and then make sure the A bombs are nowhere near them.
Yeah.
Right.
It's going to be crazy. So one thing you can do is, well, the way we ended up doing it is like we waited until there was 10 seconds left on the like explosion timer when you wipe in the intermission. And then there was a call, you know, okay, kill them now. Mm-hmm. And realistically, you can do it at like 12 seconds because you're pushing it zero. The people downstairs probably die anyway. But, you know, you wait until there's like 10, 12, maybe 15 if you're feeling lucky. Seconds left on the intermission timer, and then you kill stuff. And that, with this health nerf, I feel like you can actually do, like you said, just dot the banshees and then just kill all of them in that 12 seconds.
Yeah, it'll lessen sort of that sketch part. I think the only scary part will be is if, like, with so much less health on the phylactery now, getting a boomkin that sort of crits or gets like randomly rolls.
I don't think we're putting a boomkin downstairs anymore.
Yeah, no, it'll be sketch.
If I had to guess, our first comp for downstairs in the phylactery is going to be like, you can't. So the other thing about this, if you push before the Howling Blizzard, you push it about a minute 50 in phase one. Which means that you can't put 2-minute classes downstairs because they won't have their cooldowns back.
Yeah. Yeah. You'll push them in.
Like slightly. I mean, I guess you can. You probably can.
They'll just be a little bit. They wouldn't be a full 10 seconds. Like, she still have the RP of like the portal opening, right? But it'd be close.
But basically, I think our first comp is going to be like paladins. Like, we're going to send a couple rep paladins downstairs with some other random DPS, and it will send like a fire mage and some other random 2-minute class downstairs. And then the last one just basically doesn't matter. We'll put the boomkins down there because they need to not do very much. We need to not have very much damage downstairs, and boomkins don't do very much damage outside of that. So
that's true.
The boomkins can go down for the last one.
Yeah, just slowly take it down. Yeah, yeah. So I mean, DPS wise, it'll be interesting to see how that sort of works itself out. But definitely, I think it'll quicken up everything in the intermission, and then all this sort of faster timings of things, they then sort of nerf frozen destruction by 40%, which I think essentially means that at this point you can get away with just a DR, like two DRs for each time. I think you'd still break all the spikes at the same time, but you don't need every healer cooldown. You probably just need like AM and SLT or barrier and something else.
Yeah,
right?
You can probably just assign two healer cooldowns to each.
You can do like barrier and a rally and like maybe the like a revival and sort of cover, you know, most of the healing needed there for the initial hit. So you might even get away with just a single spirit link. I haven't looked at logs from people who killed it in terms of
probably
at least the damage
could
stuff. But yeah, so like, it'll be,
you probably want a spirit link plus a throughput cooldown to heal through the dot, but
yeah Yeah, but you could get away with maybe just Spirit Link. So it'll just help that in terms of like the one-shot potential. I did look at kill times, and it was, I think Limit took like 2.5 or 3 minutes off their best kill time, at least according to their public logs this week on Kel'Thuzad. So it definitely quickens the fight, which I think is good. There's not a lot, there's really zero waiting time at this point. So
yeah.
But yeah, I mean, maybe this is the type of fight we should have got at the start, but I mean, we'll see. I won't get a chance to do it at least for another 2 weeks, so we'll see how that goes. And then as we move on into the final updates, there's been a bunch of Sylvanas changes. So Sylvanas had a bunch of changes done to a couple different abilities, all these on Mythic. So they've reduced Dominion, Domination Arrow health has been reduced. Also, Dark Sentinel health has been reduced. So those are your phase one abilities. They have gone through in phase two, Curse of Lethargy, or Lethargy, however you want to pronounce it, has its duration reduced. That's the dot from the Soul Judges, right?
Yeah. No, for Summoners.
From the Summoners, sorry. Lethargy. Yeah. So that curse has now been reduced by 2 seconds to 4 seconds. Orb detonations from the same mobs had their damage reduced by 10 seconds. And they've also reduced his veil duration or veil radius. I'm sorry. So from
this is actually really big.
That's mad. That's actually out of all the changes so far, that's the biggest one, I think. And then in phase three, they've reduced the Banshee's Fury damage by 15%. So just less damage overall. And then finally, all the tank damage has been reduced by about 8% across the board.
The greatest irony of the tank change is it doesn't actually do very much to reduce the risk that tanks are at. Because so much of the damage taken is from the dot, which is not reduced by these changes.
Yeah. Yeah. So a lot of the changes, you'll see like only one change in phase three, which is that Banshee's Fury piece. And I guess the tank damage there in phase three too, but that's across the board. But tons of changes in P1 and P2. So going through this, I mean, the P1 changes, so less health on arrows and sentinels is actually huge in terms of
Makes it a lot easier. Yeah. Yes.
So I think it's the second set of arrows. Which is where you have the veil bait normally right in the middle of it. So that's potentially somewhat difficult because people are moving as arrows are up, generally to the sides. And if you bait the veil in the middle between the two stacks. So that sort of lessens the point at which like people get to 5 or 6 stacks of your arrow debuff. And then also with arrows going down quicker, that's more boss DPS. So you have an easier time hitting.
That's been the big thing for us is we actually started... I think we've dropped off combat potions entirely from phase one now. We don't hit them anymore because we started, I have to call a DPS stop before the first black arrow lands on the final set.
Yeah.
We would need to push about 10 seconds sooner in order to entirely skip that set. And doing that would also screw up our healing CDs for the intermission. So we're intentionally like not going to do that. But that does translate into a lot of boss HP.
Yeah, a lot of boss HP. And then in turn, those same domination arrows with the intermission becomes much easier. Like we rarely see people, like we used to see consistently probably about, depending on the clump, maybe 1 to 1.5 clumps hit about 5 stacks.
Yeah.
Now it's like the final clump is like has maybe like 2 or 3 people that's getting that high from an intermission perspective. So yeah.
Killing the last arrows at like Rive 6, maybe Rive 7 before. Mm-hmm. Now it's like Rive 5.
Yeah. You know? It's real quick. So the health nerf there, I think just cleans up phase one, makes it a little bit more consistent. You get more boss damage, like we said. And the arrows, while they're not too terrible of a problem, that second set of arrows for us, someone would always be very close if they had a high set of arrow stacks. To dying to the black arrow. Is the black arrow wailing arrow?
Black arrow, yeah. We actually had the same thing. We had a lot of deaths early on in our prog to people being at high stacks of the chains because people just weren't respecting the damage done by the chain dot.
Yeah.
You know, if there wasn't other dangerous damage going on, they were like, well, we can just cleave these down. No, you do actually want to kill those arrows quickly because that dot will get people killed.
Yeah, no, 100%. That and everybody's moving, so like healers don't have a chance to focus. You have sentinels about to come in, so it's a lot of movement topped with, you know, a fair amount of damage. So it's a big change to the health. So phase one just I think generally becomes more consistent, and then in phase two, a lot of the Gib damage, or at least the damage that was going to kill a bunch of people, came from that curse taking on someone as orbs are detonating. So reducing both those in terms of damage is huge. There's still, I mean, at least for us from a healing perspective, there is that sketchy part is as you're running into the platform, you get the first set of curses and first set of orbs come out. And it's always a little sketchy, a little touch and go there, primarily probably because people have like wave stacks on them and it's a little tough. But this has sort of cleaned that up, made it not as scary, I'll say. So for us, it's been a much more consistent in phase two with these changes in. Damage has been a lot lower. I've been getting to phase three with, one, two, actually, what is it? You could have up to three battle res. So like, having almost all our battle res going into phase three a couple times has been really good.
Yeah.
And the veil change is, sorry.
Oh, yeah. The veil change is the biggest, like, by far. You can actually, so we were dropping Windrush totems and using roars and things like that to get people out of the veils, except for the one that, we used the gateway on. You can just walk out of it now.
Yeah.
You don't even need a speed boost.
No.
You can just walk.
It's very, very easy. Very easy. So, yeah. It also means, like, your baits can be not as bad. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, before, particularly in, like, the second add platforms, baiting there was almost required just because of all the people. If you had one person out of position, you had a bad overlap, you might have a team or group that can go nowhere, and then you're just eating Veil into an already high damage platform. So people would be dead or would die. It made it a lot easier to move. So, and then the Banshee's Fury change, to be fair, I've not seen enough of phase three, I think, to make heads or tails of this one, or not make heads or tails of it, but to really notice it. But damage reduction on Banshee's Fury, always nice to have less damage in phase three.
I think this is really just going to mean that people get randomly killed by incidental damage more than anything else. Because if there's a Veil Cleave going into a Banshee's Fury now deals 15% less. There's just going to be, like, instead of getting barely overkilled, they're going to live. And that's going to be just like one or two messy wipes prevented.
Yeah, exactly. Tons of Sylvanas changes. I think for us, like, having all day Tuesday on it, and even mostly Thursday, but with Tuesday with our full comp when these were in, I mean, we hit phase three the first pull of the night. And consistently hit phase three the entire night. We probably had a handful of bad pulls, but it made phase one and phase two just, I wouldn't say like on lock, but the consistency upped with
these changes. Same for us. Like, we were all already, pretty consistently getting to and starting to get consistently through the intermission. Mm-hmm. This just, like, dramatically smoothed things out. It's very noticeable.
Yeah.
It is actually, I think, funny because of how the arrow HP translated into boss damage in phase one. I think that has actually caused us to shift more people's damage into the arrows despite their lower health. Because we're pushing the boss so much faster, we know we can sacrifice it, which has then further cleaned up the phase.
Oh, yeah. No, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That, and like, yeah, it's nice that the other thing about these changes, too, is that it's nice that they target only two of the three phases, right? So, in terms of like leaving phase three as it is sort of a final difficulty hump to get over, I think is a good first round of changes. You'd expect
Oh, go ahead.
Now, I was going to say, I'd expect like the next round of changes, if they ever do any, to target like phase three things.
But I think we will get, like, do you remember the final change to Denathrius where they like reduced the HP by like 5% or something in the last phase? It went from like you pushing it at like 40% or 42% to pushing it at like 37%.
Yeah.
I expect we will get like a change like that for Sylvanas. You know, maybe she dies at 49.5 now instead of 44.5 or whatever.
Gotcha.
As like the last change for the last couple of weeks of the tier to kind of get the last few people over the hump that they're kind of limping through Sylvanas trying to get there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I remember that Sire change now, because I remember we talked about it, and like the worst thing they could have done was change his overall HP because of how timer based like those worked. So yeah, so the change to like what is it, it reduced the HP he had when he automatically transitioned into the final phase.
Yeah,
a good change. So
yeah,
no, cool. So yeah, so that's sort of the major raid changes. It was actually a lot. We spent a lot of time on that, actually. So there's a ton of it, but I think the Kalthazar changes are cool in terms of just making that fight not a snorefest, and then the Sylvanas changes, like I think we've said, have just cleaned up and made P1, P2 more consistent. I don't think it's, if you're starting to progress on Sylvanas Mythic, it's not a like cakewalk by any stretch of the imagination.
Oh yeah, no, it's still definitely not.
Yeah, I think it's still difficult. It's just it just makes it, as you get better at it, it's phase one is more consistent in terms of like pushing and living and things like that. So so cool. Anything else from on this?
There's one hotfix I wanted to mention.
Okay.
I think we can mostly skip the rest of the hotfixes because they're pretty minor.
Yeah.
They did more performance work on Sylvanas on the start of phase one. And it's also pretty noticeable. So basically never have lag on these pull now. Basically across the entire raid. It's pretty nice. You know, I'm sure this would have been nice to have happen a few months ago. But it is, I guess, better late than never.
That's good. I saw that note. To be fair, like, it's funny. People complained about lag on Sylvanas. I never really saw
it. I didn't have it either. But I do know that, like, this week we had people go, oh, wow, I'm not lagging.
That's good. So, yeah, I wonder if it's, like, a connection thing or, like, a machine.
Maybe.
Like, a low-end machine. Like, not a low-end machine, but, like, a machine spec thing, right?
Like, I'm thinking it might be like a connection thing where they like have to send lots and lots of status updates for whatever initialization happens at the start of the fight.
Gotcha.
And it's just like, if your connection's a little bit slow or you got like poor quality connection with like high packet loss or something, it's just losing stuff. And that's not happening as much because they optimized it. I don't know.
Oh, that's cool. Awesome. Well, happy for everyone to have a better playing game. That's for sure. So cool. So I think we'll run through these next handful of notes. I have one that I want to hit on, but we'll touch on a couple of these things. So we're seeing continued, I guess, updates to the game in terms of names of things. So Twin Consorts, which was a boss in Throne of Thunder, has been renamed to Twin Epreons. This is the Twin Consorts and Big Love Rocket changes.
Yeah.
And they also renamed the Big Love Rocket to the X-45 Heartbreaker, which I found people are really upset about this, which I find funny. It's just like, because this also comes with, they've changed some like art in the game where like
to fruit baskets
and people are people get,
that's become a big meme.
It's a huge meme. I mean, like, there's this idea, I don't get too much into it, but like, if the team that makes this game thinks the names don't make sense, so they come from an era of the game that they want to correct, like, just let them make the changes. Like, I don't know. It's like, it seems like there's this whole thing about Blizzard trying to, some of the comments you see is like, they're like censoring WoW or like, this is something awful, but it's like, a lot of this comes from an era of WoW that you probably want to clean up and like forget about, or not forget about, but like, correct, right?
Move on.
Doing stuff like this helps that, I think. And look, it's not, people aren't holding gun. I saw some comment was like, this is just, there's something about like, this is just like the social justice warriors holding a gun to Blizzard's head. And
same thing as like, do you remember the whole thing about Tracer's ass? Do you remember that?
Yes,
it's exactly like that. I've seen exactly the same comments, pretty much word for word. You just like change, you know, whatever context about Tracer's ass for whatever smutty painting was somewhere in the game.
Yeah, it's just like, this is what the dev team wants. I don't know. It's just I can't. Yeah, anyway, I thought I'd bring it up, but
I think there is a legitimate, like, somewhat of a legitimate concern about them, you know, going far enough that it's kind of like this puritanical, like, okay, no sexual references, anything in the game, nothing at all. And they have not reached that point. They have not gone that far. There are still, like, for example, all of the what are they called? The romance novels.
Yeah, all the steamy
all those are still novels. In the game. The steamy romance novels are all still in the game, stuff like that. They're still definitely not afraid of like having those jokes. I think there are just some that just are in bad taste, and they're cleaning some of those up. Some of them, I think, are a little bit like the twin consorts. I don't think they needed to change.
Yeah,
I understand why, but I don't think they needed to. Big Red, the whatever it's the Big Love Rocket. Yeah, they can change that name. It's a very transparent dick joke. They can just like the world is no worse for having one fewer thinly veiled dick joke in it.
Yeah, exactly. So those are name changes sort of coupled with some of the other like achievement changes they've made updates to. So I'm assuming we'll see more of this just as we go. It just is what it is, I think, from my standpoint. So So cool. So the next up is actually some 9.5 PTR updates, which we'll touch on fairly briefly, but it's actually an interesting change. So, and actually the only two I want to sort of handle or talk about are the monk ones and the priest ones, really. If there's other ones, we can sort of talk about it. But the monk one, so Chi Burst talent, now deals reduced healing beyond 6 targets, which when you read this, you think, oh, Chi Burst did full healing to all targets. And that's not the way Chi Burst worked. It's also not the way Divine Star worked. Which is the other note for priests. And the actually way they worked was very, very interesting in that if you think about Chi Burst, it's a projectile and it still is governed by the same sort of AoE cap rule. So if you threw Chi Burst through your raid and you hit 6 people, anybody beyond the 6, it did reduced healing to them, right? Yeah. But if you were able to position yourself where you had 2 groups or 2 clumps of players and you hit the first clump of 6 or more players, it'd do reduced healing there. But then when it got to the next group of 6 or maybe the next group of 4, it would do full healing to that group. And the way it worked was there apparently was a timeout in terms of when it considered something to be a part of healing more than 6 players. And so if the groups were spread far enough apart, you could heal your close group for full healing and you heal a far group for full healing and hit more than 6 targets. So it's this convoluted thing that like, I would say that very rarely could you make any practical use out of this. It was just an interesting sort of idea of like, if you want, like it's the reason that whenever we had 2 clumps of players, I would always try and like angle my Chi Burst from the melee group to the range group, but try and make sure they're as far apart as possible. If I had the ability to be like, hey, can range take a couple steps back? Just because at that point, like you get that sort of extra healing. Which I mean could I guess equate to a lot at the end of the day, but it was kind of very difficult to make use of. So that's how the spell previously worked. Nowadays, and I'm assuming Divine Star worked the same way. Halo do, right? In terms of like if it hit hit one clump of players first and then enough time had passed by the time it hit the next clump of players, it still do sort of full healing on both groups. Now they've just changed it to like if it hits 6 players or if it hits more than 6 players, it'll do reduced healing across the board. Which makes me think of how they actually figure that out. But because to be fair, like Chi Burst is a projectile, so it has like different points where it'll hit over the course of the spell. So
yeah.
I'm wondering how they actually figure out the reduced healing to start with, unless they wait till the spell ends and then do the reduction.
Yeah, that's really an interesting question. I suspect it's just going to be that like when it hits the 7th target, they're just going to get healed for less. Like,
yeah, that's fair. It's basically track targets hit over the course of a single projectile.
Yeah, I suspect that's how it's going to work.
That's fair, but to be fair, this has been literally this is the way the spell has worked since its introduction in MLP.
Yeah.
So like,
9 years
later, they get around to fixing it and making it less complicated.
But I also wanted to briefly mention the Kyrian Path of Ascension changes. Path of Ascension, one of the rarest titles in the game is the title for completing the Path of Ascension meta achievement. Because completing the Path of Ascension on the highest difficulty requires doing a bunch of cheesy bullshit. Like... It's pretty bad. So, and you need to do all the ascension crafting stuff in order to even like make attempts on it. So I have actually, I guess full context, never bothered with Path of Ascension because I had heard how bad the the final difficulty was, and I was just not interested. But we have people in guild that have done it. One of them actually has the achievement, and the other one has kind of just like stopped bothering with it because of how bullshit the highest difficulty is. So,
yeah,
slight nerf, but yeah,
and yeah, it's funny because I've heard that Path of Ascension was the best sort of Covenant mini game that they put in of the four Covenants that have their sort of like mini game thing. Path of Ascension, I think, was considered by many like the most potential, or the had the most potential to be cool. So
it's the only one that's really like fully fleshed out, I think.
Yeah.
But it's also not like tuned well at the at the end of it, basically.
Yeah. 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 So that's an interesting change finally. Alrighty. Moving on. Did you have anything else from the PTR notes?
Yeah.
I think that's our little PTR update for the day, for the week. So a couple of, or actually, sorry, one other PTR change. We'll sort of do these in a little bit of a different order. They are going through and nerfing a bunch of legacy bosses, and they're sort of focusing in on, it seems like HFC or Antorus, I'm sorry, and Tomb. So a lot of the Legion stuff is basically being nerfed. The Antorus stuff is actually pretty interesting because it's one of the only, I think, one of the older raids that I've tried to solo and do. Yeah. Just because, I don't know, it's, you get bored and you kill. I kind of want the mount from Arthas, or sorry, from Argus.
I got it. I know. It's great.
Shit. It's the only thing I care about is mounts in the game. So I kind of want to do that. But yeah, unfortunately, you can't do Aranar the Lifebinder for reals. And Aggramar is also extremely difficult. Actually, if not impossible to solo, if you don't have a pet.
Because of the knockback.
Yeah, because of the knockback, yeah. So they're making a bunch of changes just basically make this content easy, maybe potentially, or not potentially, but making it easier to solo or duo, however you want to do it. So they're going through and making those updates, which I think is really cool. Because they have like this trove of old raids that, I mean, to be fair, the cooler thing, and I saw this mentioned, I forget who mentioned this on Twitter, somebody did. About like maybe doing like a 5-man mode for this stuff where it's like difficult, but like you get to do it with your friends and it's like very similar in terms of like stuff like that, which would be a cool reuse of this.
Reintroduce 10-man raiding with the old content. Yeah.
That also would be pretty cool. So, but yeah, they're sort of cleaning that up, making it, I think.
They haven't touched ANR yet. They need to, but they haven't touched ANR yet.
Yeah, ANR, I think, was on their list of like, hey, we're making updates to it. Eventually, but yeah, that one, Aranar, however you pronounce it, there's no changes on PTR yet for that one, but it's on their list of like, because it's weird that they'd go after like that raid and do Aggramar and like the, what is it, the coven or whatever.
Oh yeah, and the coven one, yeah.
Yeah, and then not do Aranar, which is like notoriously like almost impossible to solo. So cool changes there on PTR. We'll get to do that in 915. All right, so final, one big thing for me that I want to touch on is they have updated the achievement on the offensive. On the offensive is the meta achievement for Korthia. It's a part of the meta achievement. They updated where you only now need to do 6 of the 9 Covenant Assault achievements, which is actually ridiculous. I have done all 9. I'm pissed that they changed this. I literally had to wait until about a week ago to do one of them because the quest you needed to spawn had not spawned until last week. Since the start of 9-1. So this is actually this is a really good change. It just makes it so you don't have to wait for like the quest rotation to line up with like actually being able to finish the achievement. So so you need to do less of the Covenant Assault achievements to now get the meta or get on the offensive, which is a part of the Korthia meta. So I'm 1500 rep away from rank 6, and then I get my sweet hand mount. So this week, hopefully. This week.
I did Korthia for the first time in a long time this week. To get to the Renown Weekly so that I could finally get rid of autofile on Mechanicos.
Nice.
It's so nice to be able to actually push that Kyrian potion when I want to instead of just having it go off.
Yeah, like auto proc, yeah.
Yeah.
Funny. And only one other final minor 915 thing is just they've separated out bonus loot in the dungeon journal, so now you can see what's considered bonus loot or like your not a part of the loot that drops.
The push personal stuff versus the, like, here is your item drop stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be good for teams or for people just to realize what's actually on the bosses in the two different sort of loot drop things, which is now becoming somewhat complex, I realize. They should fix that. Maybe they should go to the system where, like, everything drops and you get, like, one person to raid to hand it out to the person most deserving, or the person to, like, help them raid the most. That might be a cool loot system.
Yeah.
They might have done
what would they call that?
You'd be, like, the master of the loot, right? So maybe, like, master loot?
Maybe. That does make sense, yeah.
That might make sense. So
yeah.
All right. In any event, I think that's the week. That's a lot of topics. I think the boss changes we spent a lot of time on, which was good because...
Yeah, boss changes are pretty big.
Yeah, I mean, huge on Sylvanas, like I said. Easily cleaned up a lot of the issues we were having. Making more consistent P3 pushes, so... All right, so now I guess we transition on to the topic of the day. And really what I want to... This is sort of my topic, because I play a healer. But I wanted to talk a little bit about really cooldown usage, timings, how to do it, right? Because I think in terms of DPS, there's like one way of thinking about it, and it's very solo-minded or singular-minded, right? I think some of the bosses, you sort of play your cooldowns around what'll help the raid the most, but in a lot of cases, you're trying to do as much damage as you can. It's all sort of personal. With healers, though, and to a lesser extent, tanks, I think, it's much more of a like team game, right? Where you are trying to work together as a group of four or five people to like make best use of your cooldowns, right? So I wanted to sort of spend just maybe one episode to talk about that. And the goal here is really just sort of like talk about how we approach it or how I approach it. Talk a little bit about, you know, what cooldowns do where, how to do, so what are some synergies between them, how to understand if you're using them right or not. Because I think sometimes people like try to look for that perfect usage when in a lot of cases you sort of use it suboptimally, maybe at one point just so it's up and sort of ready for the next time you use it. So go through all
That's a big problem actually with tanks as well. There's a lot of newer tanks that like try and maximize the use of their defensive cooldown. And then it's like, well, you can wait for the perfect moment to use it, or you can use it at several imperfect moments and actually like cast it more than once a fight.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So I think we start with like, how do you actually start on healer cooldowns, right? And I think that answer generally depends really on your progression more than anything. Like with the advent of like Warcraft logs and like where you sit in terms of when you're getting to bosses, like in a lot of cases, it's literally just like going like searching for like another raid that has a similar, you know, healing comp as yourself and just copying their cooldowns. I mean, in my position, that's generally what I end up at least starting with.
That's what we generally start with as well, is like look up a similar comp, copy their healing cooldowns, make adjustments during prog to cover gaps, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that's the easiest. But if you don't have sort of a lot of logs, and we sort of see this sometimes with the early mythic bosses in my team, just because not a lot of Mistweavers have killed it, play Mistweaver. So it's sort of some of the earlier bosses, we have to make some adjustments. And the biggest thing that I'll say is that the how to start really comes down to making sure you understand where the damage periods are in a fight. And you can do that one of two ways. You can literally look at the damage taken graphs of other kills on Warcraft logs, which is...
Yeah.
A lot of what I do, or you can read the dungeon journal or use like some PTR notes, right? But the biggest thing is like healing cooldowns are meant to smooth out higher damage periods. Sounds straightforward. Some people don't generally realize that. And you sort of align your cooldowns to when they sort of start. So you can basically copy somebody else's, or if you are early enough in progression, sort of use what you have in terms of either logs or even like your own logs. You sort of get a couple pulls in and see where the damage comes from. You can gain a lot of knowledge from Heroic too, in terms of going through Heroic as you look towards Mythic and say, all right, here's the dangerous portions of it, particularly with early bosses. The abilities don't change too much. So like the dangerous abilities on Heroic are going to be the dangerous abilities on Mythic.
As a general rule, there are some things like that on Heroic, they don't do enough damage to really be scary. But then on Mythic, there's some new mechanical overlap that just really ramps up the difficulty, even though the damage itself isn't that scary. Yeah. I think an example of that is actually on Sylvanas, where there's the Veil plus chains overlap in phase one.
Oh, yeah.
That is a lot scarier on Mythic because of the size of the Veil and how the chain damage is ramped up than it is on Heroic.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So always look for, yeah, that's a good point. So, I mean, I think that's the goal here as we look at this is always look for your high damage periods and then start to sort of understand why they're high damage, I guess, is the other point. And it could be a multiple of reasons, right? Like there's sort of a couple different terms we like to use is for like what types of boss damage you'll hit at. So you've got like rot damage, burst damage. You've got some like location-based damage where you have damage fallout based on where something's targeting someone. And you could also have sort of just like high single target damage that you need a cooldown for because it goes on maybe five or six people, not the whole raid, but you still want to sort of cool down around a handful of people getting hit very hard. So that that type of damage really starts to influence the type of cooldown you need. Because the ultimate goal is living through it, right? And so if you think about rot damage, like rot damage is just, I'm sorry, to just describe, it's like ticking damage, like consistent ticking damage. You essentially will like rot away or like slowly die over the course of, you know, 10, 15 seconds. And in those cases, like DRs are less useful because it's a lot of smaller damage that sort of adds up over time, while DRs might not cover the full duration of something like that.
A great example of a kind of rot damage scenario is towards the end of each phase on Council of Blood last year, where you had the ticking rate, the ticking dot that just stacked and stacked and stacked and stacked over on the entire raid that didn't reset until you hit the next dance. And so towards the end of those phases, you would want some kind of healer cooldown just to keep people alive through the ticking damage.
Yeah, and then this tier, like the eye intermission phase is like that. If you don't do the swap group thing, the ticking damage there can ramp up that rot damage. And even the final phase is a kind of rot damage, it's the healing reduction, which is similar. So yeah, in those cases, you want you don't want to use sort of DRs or damage reduction cooldowns. You want to use sort of more like throughput or like HPS type things. Which is slightly different than like burst damage, which is burst damage is just big hits of damage. And the goal there is really just to survive the initial hit and then heal yourself up afterwards. So looking at sort of a log where people are taking damage and the type of damage they're taking sort of then lets you influence how you want to use your cooldowns, right? And a lot of cases, and I think we sort of touched on this, you want to use your cooldowns as soon as you can, where it makes sense, so you can use them again later. I will tell you, I have had many conversations with healers in my guild who complain, because I set most of the cooldowns for my guild, who complain about me being like, hey, you need to use Spirit Link here. And they're like, well, it's awful here. And I was like, I get that, but you also then need to use it in like 3.5 minutes. So it's either use it here
or you don't use it at all.
Don't use it for 4.5 minutes and then it's wasted, right? So I think in that regard, like the way that I generally start to look at this is when I see certain burst damage events, we always want a DR there. And with any DR, I like to pair with some sort of throughput cooldown. And the idea there is that you want the DR to reduce the overall damage you're going to take from that burst, you know, with the throughput to then heal it up. It doesn't always come out that way. But sort of the basic idea is like always pair those two things together. So you DR and throughput.
There's also an element of this in WoW. Most raids just have kind of constant ticking damage. It's usually pretty low. But if you have a big burst of damage, bring the raid low, then people can die to that kind of low ticking damage. You know, you look at something like, what was an example of that? I guess you can look at almost any boss and there's like some kind of dot that just goes out either on random individual members. It's kind of a low damage dot that just needs to be healed, or just a constant background ticking damage that's just always on, and it usually doesn't kill people, but if they get extremely low from a burst damage, then they can die. And that's something that like having that kind of throughput as well to pick them up after the burst damage reduces the likelihood of
death. I mean, Soul Render I think is a really good example of like the chain breaks into the constant room AoE there, where you see that sort of DR for the chain breaks and then a throughput cooldown over top of it. So that's sort of, I think, the biggest thing in terms of when we look at least cooldown synergies, right, is like pairing like your aura masteries, barriers, spirit link totems with some sort of throughput, whether that's a revival, whether it's Ashen, although Ashen's a little bit of a cooldown of its own, regardless, or like healing tide totem, something like that, right, where you have the nice ability to, you know, have people ticked up after they get chunked or whatever. The other thing too to keep in mind is that if you don't have to use a DR for something, they're generally more valuable in terms of their usage in other parts of the fight. So like, again, look at the damage taken and then look at when you want to use it. Because in a lot of cases, if you look at very early logs in terms of progression, you'll see a lot more DR usage for maybe an ability you can live through. Right, where you don't need to potentially use it right there. So I think that's the other thing to keep in mind is you can blindly copy somebody's cooldowns, but just make sure that you're ready to make adjustments because sometimes they don't always work out the way you want.
There's also like something to keep in mind when you're looking at damage as well. It doesn't need to literally one-shot people in order to be, you know, to warrant a damage reduction cooldown. For example, the meteors on Stone Legion Generals were probably half to 60% of players' health by the time a lot of people were progressing that boss. But turns out when you hit people for half their health or 60% of their health before DRs, they're going to just die to random dots, random incidental damage. They're going to just be low going into it. They're going to get a stone shard thrown at them by General Grishal or something immediately after and just die to it. And that's where a damage reduction cooldown, that's a single big burst of damage. There's some incidental damage going on as well. And that's exactly what you're talking about with, like, you use your DR for the burst of damage. You have the throughput to pick you back up after.
Yeah. So that's sort of the idea as we look at healer cooldowns and timings. I think fight timings are the other thing that play a huge part into this is, like, you have to know when things are going to happen, I guess, is the easiest way to say that, right?
Yeah.
And that is, I think that's probably the hardest thing to learn. When I first started doing it, the hardest thing to learn was realizing that in some cases our timers end up being variable or end up being different just based on the DPS that my raid does or like the what? Oh yeah.
Yes. Just all the bosses with HP based push timers are super bad for this. Our disc priests complained forever about some of these bosses because of the push timers, you know, if they're 15 seconds off, suddenly their ramp doesn't work.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And that's sort of the biggest, I think, thing that I always work on with my raid leader about, because he's normally pretty good about knowing DPS timings and things like that. It's just like, okay, when do we think we're going to push into phase two here? When do we think we'll be, at this point of the fight? Because I just need to make sure that we'll have cooldowns up for that ability, particularly for the HP-based ones, or even the phase-based ones too, where things sort of reset. So that's, I think, the other key thing to keep in mind is, you know, when are we pushing? What are their timings going to be? And do you have the right cooldowns up for that? And so I think one of the big things that helps, I think, a lot of guilds, if you're not using it for your healer cooldowns, you should, is there's a spreadsheet out there from Viserio, which, if you don't know Viserio, I believe they raid in Fat Shark, yes, if I remember correctly.
I don't know. The link to the spreadsheet will be in the show notes, by the way.
Yeah. And so the big thing about this is what they've done is they've basically taken every boss in Sanctum and put together timers. They did one for Sire and Nathria for the end of Nathria, right? But basically they took every boss and put all the abilities in and they put timers for everything. So it's very nice and easy to see, okay, I'm going to use a cooldown here at the minute mark, which means 3-minute cooldown be up by the 4-minute mark. It's a very visual way to see how your cooldowns go.
It's super nice.
Which is, it's very helpful. And they made it customizable too, which is like if you can set like push timing, like when you push into certain phases based on time. So overall the spreadsheet itself helps immensely. And I think if you don't use that one, I think in terms of healer cooldowns, it's probably one of the, maybe not the only thing you use a spreadsheet for, but I think in terms of like helping the team, like managing a healer cooldown spreadsheet is helpful, not only for progression, but I'll tell you after progression, when you forget when you used everything, it's very helpful to like remember, oh yeah, for this boss that we did like 4 or 5 weeks ago now the last time, here's like what cooldowns we hit when.
So
I think that's sort of the, at least at a high level, the ideas of like, look, go in, I think for healer cooldowns, you have to go in with a plan. So you have to do some level of research coming into it. Understanding the types of damage inside of a fight is helpful. And then timings. I guess the other thing about timings, sorry, before we go into the next sort of section here, is from a timings perspective, the other big thing to understand is like when you need a cooldown and when you don't need a cooldown. Because there are certain bosses where you'll take a lot of damage, but then you'll have 25, you know, 10, 15, 20 seconds after it where nothing happened.
Yeah.
Right. And there's no need to cool down going into that if, number one, the damage doesn't put you in any sort of danger area. Right. And number two, there's no additional damage after it that you would want to, you know, either prop people up or make sure you take reduction, because it's like a series of abilities or events. So also like look at that. I'm trying to think if there's a boss like that in the current raid. That would be necessary.
I can't really think of one.
The only one that ever pops into mind, which is because I got an argument, not an argument, but we had a discussion in my raid about how we're using cooldowns, was Krosis, which was the bridge boss in HFC. And there was Nighthold. Because there was a point in that fight where like you took a meteor or the thing that hit the platform, where you had to soak, and then there was no damage for about 20 or 30 seconds. And we could live the meteor without using a cooldown, which meant we had more cooldowns later on for a couple abilities coming up. I remember like fighting tooth and nail about like using a cooldown there. I was like, look, we can heal through it, like, and we can top people off. So just keep that in mind when you look at cooldowns too. Don't overuse them, or use them when like you realize you'll need it. Particularly when you'll see back-to-back abilities, you need them to live. So
a lot of this also applies, by the way, to tanks, except that tanks usually don't have throughput cooldowns. Like, that's not a thing they give tanks.
Yeah.
So we almost exclusively deal in some kind of damage reduction cooldown. As a tank, you should be getting into like the nitty-gritty of like which cooldowns are good against what kind of damage. For example, Brewmaster really has two big damage reduction cooldowns: Fortifying Brew and Dampen Harm. Dampen Harm is much better against single large hits because of the way the damage reduction on it scales from 20 to 50% depending on the size of the hit. So if you get hit real hard, it's 50% damage reduction, which is huge. Yeah. If you get hit just like lots of small hits chained together, then you're at more like 20% damage reduction, and it's basically a like bad iron bark. And so you do want to get into like the details of like, okay, what kind of damage am I taking here, so that you can plan appropriately. And I mean, other tanks actually, Brewmaster is a little bit extreme because we only really have two cooldowns. We also have Zen Med, but really only two cooldowns. Something like Blood Decay with like 17 cooldowns has a couple of cooldowns that are a little bit more niche, stuff like Dancing Rune Weapon, which is a damage reduction that basically functions by giving you a huge amount of parry chance. So if you're not taking stuff that can be parried, then you have to use a different cooldown. So there's places that comes into play, something like Sylvanas. You really don't want to be using Dampen Harm for dealing with the ticking damage from the dot in phase 3, because it's going to be something like 30% damage reduction. It's like, fine, but you'll get better mileage using something else there. Something like the Aegis Trinket that takes a flat amount off of every hit ends up being something like 90% damage reduction on that.
Jesus, okay.
Because it's lots and lots and lots of small hits, and it just takes a flat amount off of each hit. That's really bad against something like Guardian, when you get hit once, and it's like 5k off of this 90k hit, hooray. But really good against something like Sylvanas, where you're over a period of 10 seconds maybe taking, you know, 30 hits, and each one might be 6k damage, you know.
I think that's a good point. Yeah, it's like, yeah, just know your cooldowns, for sure. And then I think the other side of this too is like from a progression perspective, as we look at sort of, okay, so you've done your research, you set your cooldowns, you know, based on maybe copying somebody else's, or like based on the damage that's being done, who your healers are. I mean, in some cases, who you trust as a healer, I think also comes into play when you use cooldowns. Because some of them have a bit of like a thought around, do I use it right away or do I use it like 5 seconds from now? Guardians actually is a good example of technically that. So once you've sort of nailed that down and have a plan going into a fight, I think the biggest thing then is sort of, how do you make adjustments when you're in progression, right? Because I think there is definitely a thing with healer cooldowns that I've seen is that, I mean, to be fair, in a fight like Guardians, actually, it's fairly scripted. Like, you know, you need to use cooldowns at a certain point. You know the timing. There's not much in terms of play, right? But potentially for a fight like
I think
like,
Sylvanas phase one is actually intermission is actually a pretty good example of like where you have some flexibility in CDs. It's about 5 minutes long,
right?
And depending on how people do at different points in the fight, you know, you might need a cooldown at the overlap of Veil and the arrows in order, like you might need a throughput cooldown to keep people healthy going into the black arrows, or you might need extra help at the start of the intermission to kind of carry people through that initial burst of damage, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's sort of the, you have to play that fight. You have to play the fight with your raid and understand, okay, where does it make sense? Because I think for us, like, yeah, Sylvanas, like the first fury of phase three is a Spirit Link and Revival, which essentially means for us, like we can't use Spirit Link or Revival unless it's on the, I think it's got to be before the first platform or right around the first platform if we're going to use it anywhere in phase two. So to be safe, because I have a trigger happy shaman, his Spirit Link is on the intermission because I know it will be on cooldown. So that's sort of like another thing, knowing your raid group, knowing the players too, is sort of helpful. But the idea is like, as you get into a fight and you start to see different parts of it, you know, there are going to be trouble areas where maybe other teams didn't have trouble and you need to adjust those cooldowns. And I think it's got to be, in a lot of cases, those conversations are more between me and the team versus me doing it by myself.
Yeah.
Because like, in some cases I can be like, all right, you know, we looked low here. Like, what do we need to change it? Was there just more damage going out than normal? Like, we were late on something from a DPS perspective, maybe, or did you just miss a cooldown, right? And so I think that is the biggest thing about progression, is like, you just always want to try and make it deeper and deeper and then start taking stuff away, right? That's the, I guess that's the other way you can do it too, is that like, sometimes I'll just randomly throw revivals because we need to live, right? And it'll be down.
You need to survive this mechanic so you can continue progressing.
Yeah, like it's not going to be a kill at that point, that's for sure. But you at least will have, we used to have gotten to see the next set of abilities, gotten a little bit more experience under your belt in terms of what to do with them. And then, you know, you wipe to the ability that you had revival saved for, right? Or whatever the cooldown was.
This is another thing where, so one of the, we get a lot of questions in Peak about, you know, where do I use my cooldowns? You know, how do I use this? Zen Med is the one people ask about most because it's such a like oddball. Like, they're like, I have this thing that says 60% damage reduction, but I can never find a way to use it. Yeah. But just you, especially early during progression, like just use your cooldowns. You know, if you're on a 12-minute fight and you know you're going to need all of your CDs in phase three, but you're still working on phase one, just hit your cooldowns.
Throw them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's what you'll see too. Is like, that's generally like, we normally, whenever we start a fight, particularly the end one. So like Kel'Thuzad was a little weird, but if we look back to like Stone Legion, like we would have cooldowns we needed to use at a certain point in like the first 5 minutes or the first 4 minutes of a fight. Those were set. But then any other healer that wanted to use a cooldown as we were progressing, just use it. Even if your cooldown was like up in the next 30 seconds, but it was at like the 4:30 or 5 minute mark, just use them to get us through, let us see a little bit more until we get better at the raid, right? Because I think that's the one thing that people don't, maybe they don't see because it's a healer thing, but like as you see more of the fight, your raid plays better and you take less damage. And
it's so like very noticeable as a tank too, because as the rest of the raid plays better, the tank gets more healer attention.
Exactly. Yeah.
So you go from like feeling like you need cooldowns just to live through auto attacks to like just feeling like you can tank abilities with nothing up and just get healed through it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very noticeable.
Yeah, it's the coolest part about playing, at least playing a healer and on the progression piece, is like watching, like looking back at like early attempts on a boss and then like seeing this, the amount of like reduced damage that people take is just honestly like just really cool. As people just get better at positioning, movement, understanding what's coming next, you know, pre-moving for things. So, but yeah, I think that's the biggest thing in progression, is that like, and it's sort of, you have to make, some of it's a judgment call, but I think a lot of it is just like set a time, basically say like, for this amount of time in the fight as we start it, this will be where we have to use cooldowns. And then like, if you don't have a cooldown in that set, use it whenever you want until we start getting to like the later points of the fight. Like, So, and then we just did that. I do this a lot too in terms of progression, is like, I generally call cooldowns. I use an add-on that reads from my ERT note about when cooldowns come up and sort of pops some icons on my screen so I can call them out. But at the same time, what I end up doing is, like, particularly in our case in phase three Sylvanas, we had Ashen at a certain point. And I realized that, like, if we could hold Ashen for another, like, 20 or 30 seconds, we'd get better overlap. We might, again, the ability we're trying to cover was, I think it was like a veil. And I wanted to move it back so it hit arrows plus a fury. And so I think
Ashen's also kind of weird because Ashen lasts 40 seconds.
That too, yeah, yeah.
So there's not very many other mechanics or like cooldowns where you can shift the cooldown by 20 seconds to cover more abilities.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Ashen is a weird one in this case, but I think the idea though is that like I talked to the paladin, right, our paladin player, and like was like, look, does this seem better? Will this feel better? And the veil is still going to be sketchy, but I think we can hold it off. I think the only problem is going to be if a veil person gets arrow.
Yeah.
Be in a little bit of trouble, but I think we'll have an external or something for them. But
throw a paints up on them, they'll be fine.
Yeah, it's true. But that's the idea.
Life cocoon.
It's actually a real cooldown now.
It is really good. I sounded sarcastic, but I actually like life cocoon is really good.
Yeah, solid cooldown. So I think that's another thing in progression is in terms of like making those, even if they seem like minor adjustments. I guess the Ashen one in my case is pretty big, so it's about a 20 or 30 second or 20 or 25 second difference in terms of usage. But you'll even see this in like, what do we do? We did this with Kel'Thuzad, where like we ended up using one of our cooldowns later in the spikes because we needed something for the end of it. So rather than drop everything at once, it was like, I forget what cooldown it ended up being, but there's something.
Drop everything except for like a tranquility or something, and then tranquility gets hit 4 seconds in.
Yeah. Yeah. So that way you sort of cover some of the later damage as the initial cooldown sort of run out. So just always be on the lookout, I think, for those sort of micro adjustments. And sometimes they only present themselves after you wipe to it. Right. So like, I guess that's the other side of it is like, just make sure you're always like, cause I'll always do this thing at the end of any really good pull we have, particularly like, I guess in Sylvanas, cause it's top of mind as we get into deep phase three, I'll call out, all right, these are the next set of cooldowns that would have been up if we didn't wipe here. Like, here's the next like three things that we would have used a cooldown on. And I'd be like, did everything feel fine up till that point, right? Was there any sketchy areas, anything we needed to adjust?
You know, did you have to hit a cooldown early to get us through this mechanic and it wouldn't have been up for this next mechanic?
Yeah, exactly. So and that's why the spreadsheet's definitely helpful, because I'll cross-check when I have like times in the spreadsheet versus when we actually use them in Warcraft logs, like real quickly just to see and double check. So yeah, I mean, I think the biggest thing about like healer cooldowns and potentially tank cooldowns, I know we don't do too much with our tanks in terms of like if they're using a cooldown, we'll also use when we're or understand with them.
Usually, yeah. In my experience, it usually goes the other way. The tanks look at the healer cooldowns and go, okay, the healers are dealing with a lot right here. I'm going to use a cooldown for myself.
Yeah.
To like just not need as much healer attention. Which actually, so I've talked previously on this podcast about how you should, as a tank, look at your healer cooldowns and go, okay, you know, they're using Tranquility and, you know, AM here or something like that. They're going to be busy. I need to, like, keep myself alive during this mechanic and figure out when to use cooldowns like that. Because for, like, 4 tiers or something, they just didn't give tanks, like, damage mechanics. Like, they just didn't give us anything we needed to use cooldowns on ourselves. It was all auto attacks. So you needed to figure out where to use your cooldowns based on when the healers were using them. They've actually done a lot better about that this tier, where there's a lot of like Sylvanas has a lot of things like all of my defensive cooldowns as a tank on Sylvanas are like actually for things that target me. Same thing on Guardian, not on Kel'Thuzad, but Kel'Thuzad is a silly fight and we don't need to worry about that.
Sure.
But Sylvanas in particular has a lot of like, oh, I'm using a defensive cooldown here and here and here, and it's all for things that are targeting me. Or it's when I'm like taunting while I already have stacks of the debuff and I need to like live through this next piece of damage, you know, stuff like that. But very highly recommend if you're tanking, talk to your healers, get their healer cooldown assignments, and go like, okay, I'm going to start off, like if you're just starting off, one, look at Warcraft logs, just like Anand was talking about for healer cooldowns. Go look at when tanks are using cooldowns. Like, it's very easy to find other brewmasters that have progressed these fights. But like, when they use their cooldowns, it's a very good way to get started. But failing that, look at when your healers are using cooldowns, because they're the ones that are going to be keeping you alive. And if they're busy keeping everybody else alive, you might need
no time for you.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I guess the other question that I would have is, do you view externals as something you use like at a certain point, or is it more of a like emergency situation?
We usually start without externals assigned,
mm-hmm.
but then like we will reach a point where like, I think at the, what was an example of this? I'm trying to remember, there's one boss this tier. Well, we don't do this too often because honestly, like we just had a bunch of externals. Like we had, you know, two pain suppressions and three. We at one point had four paladins in on Sylvanas progression. So we could literally like just chain
sack everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, when I'm getting over, I guess actually, so on the first platform, when we are towards the end of the Goliath early on, I was just calling for Bark just all the time. Just every time, you know, my dampen harm would run out, I would call for Bark. It is very consistent. I don't do it anymore because the Goliath dies more quickly, mm-hmm. As we've gotten better at it. But it is something where I think there is a lot of value in consistency.
Uh-huh.
But also, like, healers should just throw out the externals, and tanks should have a view of what externals are available so that they can call stuff.
Yeah, that's generally what we end up doing too, is like there's just certain points of the fight as we keep getting there, the tanks die, or they like they're very low and could die, that we sort of treat them very similar to raid cooldowns, just like use them generally around this area. And we give like a, it's like, I know that for me, like life cocoon's always on that set of arrows, the second set of arrows in P1. So I'll either life cocoon a low person with the arrow debuff or the tank, because
I fully expect that, like, as we get more into phase three, I'm going to be calling for, you know, sack on this arrow, paints up on that arrow, because I'm going to be doing all the vacuuming. I'm going to be taking all the wailing arrows. I'm going to be off of the platform, not be able to get healed quite a lot. And I'm going to want those damage reductions.
Yeah, that's for sure. But yeah, I think that about covers everything I wanted to cover on healer cooldowns. I mean, I think the idea, though, like just to wrap it up, is, I mean, always go in with a plan. I think going in blindly without at least understanding where you need to use them is like the wrong approach. You're going to just wipe. Your rage is going
to
wipe.
That applies as well to DPS, for the record. Like, you should go into a fight knowing when you hit cooldowns, because the naive approach of I'm going to hit my 2 minute cooldown at 0, 2, 4, and 6 minutes is almost never correct. Like, especially you look at something like Painsmith. You know what happens at like 2 minutes, 20 seconds? The intermission. So if you hit your 2 minute cooldown right on cooldown, you're going to clip part of it and lose it from pushing him.
Exactly.
You're better off holding it and like learning when those things are so that you can plan appropriately. Like maybe that, you know, that trinket that in theory is better because it's got a 90 second cooldown is actually not better on this fight because you can't actually use it on cooldown because of some other mechanic happening.
You know? Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, that's, yeah, I guess it does apply to both. And then I think the other thing too is like always treat this as like a team game, right? So like the idea is with healers specifically, like you're not a solo player, right? Like you have to basically bounce things off of your other healers. Game. Yeah. So yeah. So I mean, just make sure that you sort of talk to other people, because I think in a lot of cases I've had in the past in some of our raid teams very silent healers in terms of like feedback on how things are going, and it's just always difficult. So I just sort of treat it like that's the reason I started calling cooldowns was Rosticon actually. Like the phase three of Rosticon, it's like just no one would put anything together, and I was like, fine, I'll just call it live. So literally I would like throw up ERT with a list of all our raid cooldowns, just like every big flame thing. I think that was what it was. I was like, call a cooldown and just use it, whatever was up. And so sort of it kept doing it from then. But yeah, that's the other big thing, is like just be vocal as a healer, mm-hmm. in terms of like not like in the middle of a raid, but like after it, like with your group, just be like, okay, we need to do something here. I think this was sketchy, you know.
Communication is key. Yeah.
And then use that spreadsheet. I think that's the final point. Use that spreadsheet from Viserio.
Yeah.
Particularly if you, I mean, if you are a person who calls cooldowns or is in charge of this stuff, like the ERT note that is built from the spreadsheet is amazing. It'll count down through the abilities. And there's also there's a weak or that they link that'll actually pop up the icons with the names of who needs to use the ability, like somewhere on your screen. So you don't always have to check the note. So,
yeah.
But yeah, I think that's healer cooldowns. I know that we've run out of time for the other sections, but yeah. I think that's all I wanted to talk about today, unless you had anything else.
No, it's like, I think that really about covers it. I do think as well, just something that actually DPS and tanks and to a degree healers, like press your defensive buttons, press your defensive cooldowns, like just press them. Doesn't matter if it's optimal or like you press it and then your co-tank taunts or something, like it happens. Don't do it.
Yeah.
Don't do it that time next time.
Exactly. I think unless you need it for a specific point, like just use them. When you need it, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think as you get more comfortable with the fight, you'll realize you need it at like certain points. But like when we first were doing P2 on Sylvanas, I just would use defensives. Like I used both my defensive on the first platform.
Yeah.
Just because I didn't know how to live. I didn't know like how to live through stuff. So it's like, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, but that's something too. Like as you progress a boss, your damage taken as a raid collectively goes down.
Yeah.
So exactly. You're going to start off maybe needing all of your defenses in the first phase and then progress to the point that you don't need any of them in the first phase.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, yeah. It's fun for sure. So.
All right. Awesome. Cool. I think that is going to be our show today. We are going to go ahead and wrap things up there. We will not have a show next week. Anam is not going to be available. I am going to take the opportunity to sleep in extra long. I think that's what I'm doing.
It must be nice to sleep until 1 o'clock in the afternoon when we record these.
3 o'clock in the afternoon when we end recording these. Just sleep all day.
Oh, God.
but that is going to be our show for today. Thank you all for watching, for listening. If you enjoyed the show and you want to support it and the other work that we do over at the Peak of Serenity, you can do that over on our Patreon at patreon.com/peakofserenity. And of course, we have our Discord, which is a great place to be. Brew Lounge is, of course, still the best channel in the Discord. Would highly recommend you check it out if you're into tanking. And if you're not into tanking, you're still welcome to come and hang out. Abe does, and well...
it's not a good thing.
But yeah, that's going to be the show for today. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.